The ultimate swing state is swinging just slightly in favor of Hillary Clinton. Just ahead, a look at the state of the race in Florida. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you're staying dry out there. Be advised of that tropical storm headed our way and keep listening to 89.9 throughout the day for updates. We're always live on the radio. You can also catch this show's podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show now too with video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. Just ahead, we want your calls this wet Monday morning as Hillary Clinton edges ahead of Donald Trump in Florida. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, just how hard is it for an American company to keep all its jobs here in the USA? That's been a big campaign issue this year. We'll speak with one local business owner, plus Culpepper with sports, all of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Hillary Clinton currently holds a 3-point lead over Donald Trump in a new Florida poll. It also shows Hispanics are helping the Democrat, and also that the newly named Libertarian presidential candidate in Florida might be hurting Trump. The Mason-Dixon poll shows Clinton with a 45-42% lead over the GOP frontrunner. That resembles other recent Florida polls. But unlike other Florida surveys, Mason-Dixon polled Libertarian Gary Johnson for the first time in the state, and they found out he comes in a distant third but holds 6% of the voters' support here in Florida. Could the Libertarian candidate be a spoiler in this race? UNF pollster Mike Binder has been tracking the numbers and joins us now with his thoughts about the race and Florida's importance. Good morning. Always good to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And here's our question to callers. As Hillary Clinton edges ahead of Donald Trump in Florida and the Libertarian candidate emerges, we want to know what you think. Give us a call about the race. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. The Mason-Dixon poll, you're a pollster. Of course, you run UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. The Mason-Dixon poll is consistent with other polling, but they did something different this time. They asked voters about the Libertarian in the race, Gary Johnson. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's, first off, everybody talks about, oh, there's this third candidate option, Gary Johnson, Libertarian. Well, truth be told, there's probably going to be somewhere around 20 candidates on the ballot from a host of alternative parties. So it's not just Gary Johnson. And I think this speaks to a couple of different things. One is there's obvious great distrust amongst both major party candidates, and some folks are possibly looking for an alternative. I will press pause and highlight Libertarians have ran candidates in the past, and you know they get 1, maybe 2% generally in these things. So I wouldn't take a whole lot of stock in that 6%.
You think that's a little higher than what we'll see in, November?
I think it's a lot higher than what we're going to see in November. Maybe 2%, I think is probably my best guess. But you know, obviously things can change and things of that nature. And he was a governor and a respectable candidate.
That's interesting considering that so many voters in Florida and an increasing number of them around the country don't identify with either party. They're no party affiliation.
Right. The problem is they don't have anybody to coalesce around. And it's great to say, oh, I'm not one or I'm not the other. But unless there's that option where we can group together and support somebody, you're not going to get anywhere. And when we get closer to November and people start saying, well, it's really either Trump or Clinton, those are the only two that have a realistic chance of winning, who's my at least most preferred option, if not, you know, voting against the most opposition.
Right. And as we speak with UNF pollster Mike Binder about the new polls showing Hillary Clinton about 3 points ahead of Donald Trump in Florida, but with a Libertarian candidate now also polling in the race, we want your calls and comments. What do you think about Florida? We will be perhaps again a decisive factor this November. We'll have to see. But give us a call. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. As we look at the Electoral College, the Clinton people, according to people who track such things, say they have multiple paths to victory to reach 270 electoral votes. Donald Trump has a narrower path to get those number of electoral votes. How important do you think Florida will be again this year?
Oh, vital. And Trump has been using the line, I am expanding the base of the party. I am opening up additional states. So I'm going to have a way to the nomination that's different than previous Republicans. And while he may be bringing in some, I don't know that that the numbers he's bringing in are large enough to open up a lot of states that he thinks he's going to have access to. That being said, Florida is vital for Republicans. If you look back over the last 20 plus years, you win Florida, you win the White House. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's very important for Trump to win. His path becomes nearly impossible without Florida.
Can Trump take Florida from Clinton? According to the Mason-Dixon poll, there have been some defections from Trump to Gary Johnson among white Republican and independent voters. That hurts Trump. And Hillary Clinton has very strong support in Florida, 68% among Hispanic voters. Can Trump overcome those deficits?
It's certainly possible. It's going to be a close race, I suspect, within a few percentage points either way. But it's going to be difficult for Trump for two reasons. One, if there are Republicans that are disaffected, the Libertarian candidate historically has been their outlet. They tend to be more in line with them on economic policy issues, and economics often tends to drive vote choice. The other piece of this is the Hispanic vote, and we've been talking about the Hispanic vote, not only here in Florida, but in California and across the country for 20 plus years. Slowly, more and more Hispanics are beginning to become registered and participate in the process. If, as we've seen over the past several months, highlighted this past weekend, if Trump keeps alienating Hispanics, it's going to be very, very difficult as the number of whites in this race begins to drop.
Let me ask you as well, the pollster asked Florida voters if they would be more likely to vote for Hillary Clinton if she chose U.S. Senator Bill Nelson as her running mate, which isn't likely.
Right.
That didn't help her in Florida. At the same time, voters were asked how they would feel about Governor Rick Scott as Donald Trump's running mate. And 40% of Florida voters said that was a negative.
Sure. And Rick Scott, even though he won re-election a couple years ago, has some baked-in opposition, particularly on the left. And then he's alienated several groups, not traditionally left groups, throughout the last couple of years. So there are some people that dislike Rick Scott.
He also asked Brad Coker, this pollster, who, by the way, he's based here in this area, or he was. He asked about the possibility of Hillary Clinton being indicted by the FBI regarding the use of her private email server when she was Secretary of State. In a hypothetical matchup, he found that Joe Biden would decisively beat Donald Trump should Hillary Clinton leave the race. In Florida, Bernie Sanders would tie Donald Trump. What did you think about that? Hypothetical question.
Right. It's fascinating. It's interesting. The problem is neither one of those candidates has been put through the opposition campaign and the negative attacks that Hillary Clinton's been put through for 20 plus years. Joe Biden has really had a free pass for the last 8 years in a lot of ways, particularly after the death of his son. Bernie Sanders has been handled with kid gloves by the Clinton campaign because she's afraid of alienating that wing of the party. So if you were to bring either one of those into the race against the Donald Trump, you would see those numbers change and get a lot closer.
Let's go to your calls for UNF pollster Mike Bender. As new data shows, Hillary Clinton about 3 points ahead of Donald Trump in Florida with its key electoral votes. What do you think about the race right now? What are your thoughts? Who will get your vote in November? Give us a call at 549-2937. Peter is on the west side. Hi, Peter. Hope you're staying dry out there. Good morning. What's the weather like where you are?
Good morning. It's relatively dry here.
That's good.
I don't think that's the last long. I just wanted to check in and say I became a registered libertarian almost 20 years ago because I realized that I was not being represented by anyone that was being presented to me in the two-party system. And for the longest time, I have been being basically battling the thought that my vote gets thrown away, and I constantly try and educate people that voting for the person that you actually want to be in office is not throwing a vote away. And here again, it appears like the media is adding to that by either saying they're going to take away from this side or they're going to take away from that side, and that reinforces this belief that they have no chance whatsoever. And it is throwing away a vote to vote for the candidate that you really would like to be in office. This particular election cycle, I see the first change that I've ever seen in a long time where the third party candidate is being given at least a little bit of coverage, and I appreciate that. It's never really happened before. But again, it is being spun into a negative kind of thing, as in all of these people who are supporting this person are just going to make one side or the other lose. And I think it's time for people to realize that the people of this country, if they want to change and they don't like what they see, it's going to take the support and the belief that if we really vote for who we want to be in office, it is not throwing your vote away.
Peter, thanks for the call. That's Peter. And you'll be voting, I guess, for the Libertarian in the fall. Is that right?
Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico. Thank you, Peter.
Well, there's a lot of truth to what Peter said. There's a couple things. You know, it's not that we've never had third-party candidates get attention. Ross Perot in 92 comes to mind, and Pat Buchanan after that. So they have gotten
attention.
Stockdale?
Remember him?
Oh, good old Admiral Stockdale, the greatest vice presidential debate in history.
That's right. Who am I? Why am I here? Sorry.
Fantastic.
Go ahead.
As we reminisce. But the idea that Gary Johnson's going to actually have a chance at winning this race is wildly unlikely. However, if Libertarians or Green Party or any other alternative type party begins to collect 3%, 4%, 8%, 12% of the vote, suddenly the major parties are invested and incentivized to at least begin adopting the policies of those alternative parties. That's really where the action's at. So voting for those candidates certainly can be helpful, although it might not pay off in the immediate November. Down the road, it certainly can.
549-2937. Let us know your thoughts about the 2016 election in Florida as Hillary Clinton pulls ahead by about 3 points, according to a poll of likely Florida voters against Donald Trump. Chuck is at the beaches. Hi, Chuck. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, guys. I'll preface this by saying I am a conservative Republican. However, I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump, but I may be in a position where I have to vote for him. I would consider possibly voting for Bernie Sanders because Bernie Sanders is pro-Second Amendment. He's also pro-health insurance for people. The Affordable Care Act has been successful in some ways, and I think we have to find a way to help the people who are suffering from mental illness and drug addiction, et cetera, Prince. But let me say something about Hillary Clinton, what I find very distasteful. My mother taught me when I was very young to always tell the truth. So I'm going to mention a few things. I'm just going to hit it. Trolling for trailer trash. What right-wing conspiracy. The Whitewater Papers were found in the office after they looked and looked and looked. Her email server. And then the latest thing is Benghazi. That was a total falsehood by the Obama administration and Hillary. And I'm sorry, I just can't vote for someone. And I'll sum it up by this and see if you know what I'm talking about. With the Clintons, it all boils down to this. It depends on what is. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. Mike.
And this is a problem that Hillary Clinton has faced, the idea that she's not particularly forthcoming or honest. And that has bogged her down, certainly. But this also highlights the problem that Trump faces as well.
He's faced the very same accusations, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. Not only that, but we have a self-avowed conservative Republican calling the radio station saying, I really don't want to vote for him.
Mm-hmm. But he said
he probably would. But what that tells you is that if he's doing it half-heartedly and not excitedly, do you think he's going to be on the phone making calls in November to mobilize his party? Do you think he's going to be donating money to the Republican Party? Do you think that person's going to be out talking to their friends, hyping this candidate? No, they might push and they might go for that lever on November 8th. But this highlights the Trump problem. His base, the Republican conservatives, they're lukewarm at best.
And since so many voters this year say they're motivated not to vote excitedly for a candidate, but to vote for the candidate to vote strategically, to vote to keep the
lesser
other candidate
evils,
out
yeah.
that they dislike the most, How can these campaigns get that excited grassroots support going that really does make the difference, as you've said many times, in a close contest?
It's going to be hard. Trump has some supporters that are like that, but it's not your traditional Republican Party base. And so it's going to be interesting to see if that works as effectively as it has for Republicans in the past. Hillary is hoping and praying, I suspect, that the Bernie Sanders folks come on board with her and keep that excitement moving. I'm skeptical that the success rate of either one, but the media attention that this race is going to get over the next 5 months and the press that it's going to get, I think we're going to see high turnout numbers, but I think we're going to have a lot of people holding their nose when they cast their ballot.
Calls, emails, tweets coming into the show as we talk about the new polling in Florida in the presidential race. Here's a tweet from Sandy. Trump was given a less than 0% chance, so who knows what will happen with that third-party candidate. And then on our Facebook page, a Bernie Sanders supporter writes, "It will be Bernie Sanders after Tuesday. The California primary is tomorrow, Tuesday. Hillary Clinton expects to clinch the nomination tomorrow, barring a last-minute change."
Right. So she's pretty close. She'll get over that 2,300-plus delegate count that the Democrats need tomorrow. But Bernie Sanders' argument is these superdelegates shouldn't count. And because these superdelegates shouldn't count, you really aren't over the number that you need. The problem to that logic is she has almost 300 pledge delegate count that she earned through the vote. She has almost 3 million more votes, and she'll probably increase that lead tomorrow, either in California and with New Jersey as well. So she'll have this thing wrapped up. She's going to be the Democratic nominee. Whether or not Bernie Sanders officially drops out on Wednesday or, you know, hangs out around until the convention, Hillary's going to win on the first ballot.
Let's go to your calls on the presidential race at 549-2937. Bill in Mandarin. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good morning. With all that's been going on about, if not these two, who, going on so early, I'm surprised you guys haven't proposed a question about a third-party candidate selecting a couple of well-known names, like, say, Bloomberg of New York. Why wasn't that done? Has anybody voiced who candidate would be?
Well, part of the issue with that is the fact that Bloomberg has come out emphatically a couple months ago and said he's out, he's not doing it. Several other people have said the same thing. The other problem is getting on the ballot in these states is not easy. In fact, it's too late. If you're not on the ballot in Texas, you're out of luck. So, and other states are coming up very quickly, North Carolina and several other ones. So if you don't do this now, like today or tomorrow or in the next couple of days, it becomes increasingly difficult to even get your name on the ballot in 50 states. You don't just show up and say, "Hey, put my name on the ballot." There's cutoffs. So that's really another hurdle facing an alternative candidate.
Two hurdles facing the top candidates as well. This lingering specter that Hillary Clinton could face an indictment over her email server. For Donald Trump, a number of prominent Republicans continue, and they're not the majority of the party by any means, but they continue to be part of this Never Trump movement, vocally saying that to nominate Donald Trump is to cast the Republican Party into the wilderness for years and years to come. So those two factors, Mike Binder, your thoughts.
So Hillary Clinton and this prospect of a potential indictment has been hanging over her head for over a year now. And if that were to come to pass, holy cow, they would throw the race crazy. But here's the thing. If you are a ardent Democrat, you don't think that she did anything that's going to require an indictment. If you're a Republican who thinks she ought to be indicted, think about this. It's going to require the Justice Department to do that. And if you work for the Justice Department and you're going to indict the Democratic nominee for president, do you think you're going to need your boss's approval for that? Obviously. The problem is, ultimately, it's going to take the Attorney General and the President of the United States to be on board with this. And the likelihood of that occurring is very limited without a giant smoking gun. Mm-hmm. And to this point, we haven't seen that. So I think it's unlikely that that will occur. Possible, but unlikely. For the Republicans and Trump and, you know, the Republicans that are concerned about casting the party into the hinterlands, look back at Barry Goldwater in 64 and what that did to the African-American vote. It's 50 years later, and Democrats routinely get better than 90% of the African-American vote. If Democrats keep that, And then if we do the same thing to Republicans, for Republicans to do that to Hispanics, you start doing the math. There's not that many white people left in this country to start winning elections with. So there is real fear that alienating the Latino vote in this country from the Republicans to the Democrats and solidifying them as Democrats will not only harm them in 2016, but in 2026 and 2036 and 40 years down the road. That's really where the fear comes up.
We'll continue to follow it. As always, good to have your insights. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
UNF's Mike Binder runs the school's Public Opinion Research Laboratory. And he'll have more polling for us later in the summer, by the way.
Yeah, we got some congressional districts coming out as well.
That's right. Meanwhile, much more still ahead on this show. Later, Culpepper with sports. But up next, why Made in the USA is more than a campaign slogan. It's something some businesses actually try to do. We'll hear from one local CEO next.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
Wall Street is a many-faceted beast.
There's a lot going on, and I'm hoping to at least illuminate some of the issues and some of the complexity involved in Wall Street.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, a hedge fund manager who left finance for painting. We'll have that, the numbers from Wall Street, and the rest of the day's business news as well, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hello, this is Todd Smith, your Deputy Director for the City of Jacksonville's Emergency Preparedness Division. Disasters can strike with little to no notice. Create your disaster kit now, including water, non-perishable foods, batteries, flashlight, weather radio, and important documents. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
The $10 billion Veterans Choice Program was supposed to be a temporary fix that would quickly reduce the backlog of veterans waiting for care. Turns out temporary and quick are not a good fit for mental health care.
Post-traumatic stress disorder work is very sensitive. You need to have a relationship with a person.
Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, on the campaign trail all this year, the likely GOP nominee Donald Trump has talked quite a bit about trade deals he says are hurting American workers and outsourcing too many good jobs overseas. That got us thinking, how much are companies trying to keep jobs in this country? Which companies are really doing that? And could we find any that are doing it locally? Well, we did find one. It's business owner Catherine Way. She owns a company that makes apparel and resort wear for women, sold in boutiques across America. And all of these garments are manufactured and distributed right here in the USA. Catherine Way joins us now with more about her business model. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Good to see you. And to our callers, what are your thoughts about Made in the USA? What do you think companies should be doing to keep more jobs in this country? What are your thoughts about trade deals, globalization, and outsourcing of jobs? Give us a call, 549-2937. You are based here at the beaches. You started this company after some time in the corporate world, correct?
Yes. I was in the corporate world for quite a few years, most of my career, and just recently, 4 years ago, started the company here in Jacksonville.
And it's taken off.
Yeah, it has. It's amazing. We've been very blessed to see it really grow from just six stores, eight stores, to over 300 stores across the country now.
People can buy, women can buy your designs in hundreds of boutiques.
Yes.
And you have a manufacturing facility where your resort wear is designed and sewn together. Where is it based?
Well, we start off with our fabric. It's made in the USA. It's knitted in California. And then produced, our prints are produced there. And then we move, ship it to Miami, where we have 20 women that are here in the U.S. makes our dresses and sends them to Jacksonville, where we distribute from here to boutiques and golf clubs and resorts across the country.
And you made a conscious decision to do it this way. Is that right?
I did. I really wanted to keep jobs at home. I mean, most of the fashion industry, if you look at it now, most of it is in overseas countries, China, Taiwan, Puerto Rico is a big one as well in terms of different places. I really wanted to keep jobs at home, and I really wanted to keep jobs here in Florida. Was very important. So it was important for me to try to find a manufacturing plant here in Florida to sew so that I could get there quickly, but also to ship directly out of here. So,
and how much money could you save if you did this with a model that outsourced the labor of sewing these garments together and everything that goes along with that? If you outsource that, say, to China, which is what a lot of apparel companies do.
Well, I could probably save another or make another 10 to 20 to 30%. However, the quality won't be near as good. And also, if there's a change that we need to make or if there's a problem we need to make, it's very difficult to get over there to see it and to make that change. And then also, I can turn on a dime. So if there's a opportunity that I can chase some business and produce product, I can produce it rather quickly by staying in the state and get it done rather than shipping it overseas.
Made in the USA, it's not just a slogan, it's the real business model for Catherine Way's company. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. You're also a women-owned company.
Yes.
You are going to be showing your designs at the U.S. Open, I think, soon.
Yes.
That's a big deal, isn't it?
That's a huge big deal for us. We are very fortunate to be showing at the U.S. Open next week, which is a 41,000 square foot tent, which is huge. And we're sending our dresses and shorts and tunic tops are hanging next to Polo and Peter Millar, which is very exciting for us this year. So 53,000 people are going to go through that tent a day. So that's pretty exciting. So we'll hopefully have new customers because of that.
You started with 6 dress designs. Now you've got over 140 prints. You've expanded greatly. It's a very profitable concern. When you hear the candidates talking about how trade deals have hurt America and how this has become a campaign issue, what are your thoughts as a business owner?
Well, I hope that they will listen to small business companies like us, because things like that is very difficult. We want to keep jobs at home, and we want to make sure that we're profitable. Small businesses are the ones that are getting squeezed out because of different things that are happening. For instance, like the increase of the minimum wage, and also the issues with of trying to keep making people move to salary or to the wage change roles that are rolling into December. That's going to hurt, you know, companies like us that we have to pay overtime, you know, instead of paying salary over the $50,000 range.
What do you pay? You've got people down in Miami manufacturing the dresses. Mm-hmm. What do they get paid?
That's a contract. I deal with a contract with them, so they handle that. So we pay by the piece that we sew. So they're paid very well and have good benefits as well.
Okay, let's go to your calls for business owner Catherine Way. What are your thoughts about companies manufacturing their products here in the USA and how that's become a campaign issue this year? Ricky on the north side, go ahead, Ricky.
Yeah, I got a question for her. How do you expect people to survive, especially in a society like this where the prices just keep going up and up? I'm talking about food, housing, et cetera, and you want to keep the wages down to a bare minimum so they can't survive. So that's why the jobs are taken overseas, because over there they can pay them whatever they want, treat them how they want. They don't need any workers' comp, any insurance, none of that. So how do you answer that, ma'am? Thank you.
Okay.
I'm not real sure exactly what the question was, but I think you meant, you know, how...
Well, if there's no wage, if you can take a job, if you can get the labor done in another country, mm-hmm. where there is no health insurance, workers' comp, unemployment insurance, et cetera, Yeah. I think he was getting at that.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. I am taking a lesser margin because I want to keep the product at home. And so it's really coming out of my own pocket to keep the jobs here in the States, which we will improve our quality of product and improve the look and feel of our product and also keep jobs at home instead of sending jobs overseas where they're not being treated as well and they're being treated and not getting paid any kind of benefits or anything like that.
549-2937, Sid on the West Side. Go ahead, Sid.
Yeah, I just have two small questions. The first question is, how do you ensure that the workers that are working for your contractor down in Miami aren't illegal aliens or immigrants? And the second question is, does your volume actually prohibit you from it being cost-effective to manufacture outside the country?
Those are great questions.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Sid.
Those are great questions. First of all, that was one part of our contract with our manufacturer is to make sure that they did have benefits, and we check that on a regular basis. And then the second is the volume. We do enough volume to keep it in the States, but we do have enough volume right now to take it overseas if we really wanted to. It's just that our choice is we don't want to take it overseas.
So you're not going to make that change?
No. We want to keep it in the States. That was the main goal.
What would you say to critics of Donald Trump's campaign rhetoric where he says the trade deals this country is putting together are really hurting America? Critics of that position will say, well, free trade overall has helped America. It's helped juice the economy. Globalization is an unstoppable force and so forth. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
You know, I'm sure it's helped in a lot of other industries. However, it's not helped the fashion industry. A lot of the fashion industry is starting to bring products back to the U.S. Great example is Karen Kane. Karen Kane's been around for 25 years. She's brought all of her lines back to the USA. Los Angeles right now is so busy. All of their plants are completely full. You cannot get another product in here to make in the USA because of it.
Your dresses are at a higher price point, but they're made with a fabric that has built-in sunscreen, mm-hmm. and there's a technology to the fabric. Mm-hmm. So your product costs more, but it also lasts longer.
It does. It's when we started making dresses, I was impressed with the technology that was built in a lot of the men's golf wear. It was a technology fabric. And so I researched and found a technology fabric to make into dresses. So it's a moisture wicking, keeps the woman cool and comfortable. It travels amazingly well, and it has a SPF 50 plus in it. So the beauty about this fabric is it's not going to be a disposable clothes like you see that are being brought into the U.S. These dresses will last quite some time if they're taken good care of and you wash them properly. And we have the beauty about that is we have a lot of women that collect them because they do last.
Ray is in Orange Park. Go ahead, Ray.
Thank you for taking my call. I called to raise two points. Number one, I applaud and commend the lady, and I'm sorry, I forgot the name, that have created this business and have made the commitment to her community to make things in the U.S. at the cost of herself. I mean, she could probably send them to China and make a lot more money, but she's decided not to do that, and I think that's the most patriotic, amazing thing. So kudos to you. And I think the second point is, we as consumers, and that includes me and everybody else, need to be a little smarter and a little wiser and understand that when things are made in U.S., they will be more expensive. We shouldn't shop for the cheapest crap that comes out of China and realize that when it's made in U.S., because of the regulation, because of the higher pay, which is appropriate, because of all of that, it will cost more, and we should be willing to pay, you know, $15, $20, $30 for a shirt instead of $5.
Okay,
and
Ray.
Support our community by being true, genuine. At the same time, we have to be able to trust that the business is going to gouge us. And I think this lady is a perfect example of a business that is honest, true. And if I was a lady, I would be buying her stuff.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Joe in Fernandina. Go ahead, Joe.
I'd just like to remind your guests that Puerto Rico is part of the United States. Yeah. And any jobs we send to Puerto Rico are helping Americans. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Yes, it is. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Do you have workers in Puerto Rico?
No, we don't. We just right now Miami only.
Okay. Keith in Mandarin. Keith, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Well, I disagree completely with anybody who says that globalization has helped the economy in the U.S. All you have to do is look at the wage from the middle class. Now, globalization has helped the upper 1 and 2% who send their company business overseas. I was just back in Minnesota for my high school class reunion, and I had a fabulous classmate who actually was severely handicapped, but he started a business, and it grew and grew and grew until he had, at one point, 180 employees, and that's in a town of 900. So he was providing employment to people from the neighboring communities. And he had contracts. It was unbelievable, the contracts he had with IBM, Honeywell, 80 different companies. He assembled parts for these companies. And it was just going fine. He was going to expand his business until Honeywell switched their contract from him to Mexico. And that pretty much led to the downfall of his business.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Keith. Your final thoughts?
You know, I really have loved being in Jacksonville and having the support of the Jacksonville people. The women here have embraced us quite a bit and really helped put us on the map. Not only have they told their friends and families and continue to support us in every way, but also the networking, I think, has been extremely important here in the Jacksonville area.
What advice do you have for a business owner who wants to make the kind of commitment you have to keep the products and the labor domestic?
You know, I truly believe that they need to embrace their dream and follow it, because it can be done here in the U.S. and also in the Jacksonville area. And I think that they need to get out and network with their friends and families that have been successful in the marketplace and really try to learn everything they possibly can before they pull the trigger. It's been exciting for me. I've had a blast doing this, and we're excited about the future of Catherine Way and where it's going.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Catherine Way Collections is based right here in this area. You can find them online at catherineway.com. And we are back in a moment.
WJCT's Great Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. Bid now. The auction continues through June 13th at 8 p.m. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
Sheriff Dave Daniel is one man fighting a losing battle.
Imagine living in an area that you call 911 and no one comes.
We go on patrol with a sheriff whose department is stretched to the breaking point. And fixing things would mean raising taxes.
People pretty much support law enforcement. They just aren't ready to pay for the law enforcement.
Lawless Lands on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity in America is a multi-platform public media initiative that provides a deeper understanding of the impact of poverty on American society. Tune in to the PBS NewsHour weeknights at 7 on WJCT-TV for compelling stories of individuals and organizations addressing such issues. And log on to chasingthedreamproject.org. Funding for this initiative is provided by the JPB Foundation and Ford Foundation. Local funding provided by Wells Fargo.
Welcome back. Well, summer is officially here. And in Florida, of course, that means usually storms like Tropical Storm Colin. It's bearing down on us right now, but also lots of heat. And we tend to think of humans as the creatures needing the most protection from the blazing sun this time of year. But what about your pets? Dr. Zachary Newman from Southeast Veterinary Oncology and Internal Medicine, that's SIVOMED, joins us now as we mark Pet Appreciation Week. He's got some tips for taking care of your pets this summer. Dr. Newman, good morning.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. You know, it's interesting. I heard Catherine talking about the sunscreen and her the dresses or the sun protection. And we have to think of our pets, too, being out in the sun, especially down here in Florida. You know, some of the big things are it's hot. It's hot down in Florida.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And everywhere in the U.S., it gets hot in the summer. And you have to remember that pets have a lot of fur, and so they get naturally much hotter than we do being outside. And avoiding those peak summer hours, so about 10 a.m. to about 4 p.m., are those peak summer hot hours. So taking your pets out on walks in the morning times or in evenings to avoid those hot times of the day is a really important tip.
Right. The same applies for animals as it does for us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I went running the other day in the middle of the day, and it was a bad decision. And then I see people running with their dogs at those same times, and it scares me.
Yeah, it's because a dog can get heat stroke, or a dog can collapse just as easily.
Just like we can.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so providing fresh water is a big important point. Watching for those signs of heat stroke, of heat exhaustion. So having, you know, signs where they're panting excessively or really lethargic, those sorts of signs.
And I didn't realize this, but you even advised that some pets need sunscreen.
Exactly.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah. So
really?
Some dogs love to go outside and they roll on their back and just lay there and soak up those sun rays. And it's important to recognize that certain dogs, so usually the dogs that are white-haired or white-furred and have less pigment on their underside are prone to developing skin cancer, just like we are. Not the same kind, but a different type of skin cancer.
What are some other things that pet owners do that, as we talk about Pet Appreciation Week, that they should stop doing? What are some other bad habits?
So leaving pets outside, chained up in the yard, not a good
thing.
Very
bad.
Yeah. Leaving them, if you go for a walk, letting them walk only on the pavement. So the hot surface is bad for their feet because not only can it burn their feet, but they sweat through their paws. And a lot of people don't know that. A lot of the big ways that they, you know, we sweat everywhere, they sweat through their paws or they pant. That's how they cool themselves. And if they get too hot, they can't cool themselves effectively like we can. Those are some of the biggest things that we need to keep in mind.
We're also concerned about the Zika virus and mosquito-borne illness. Fleas, ticks, mosquitoes are a concern for humans, but also for animals.
Exactly. These are the summer months are those months where the mosquitoes are out and they carry certain diseases with them, as do ticks. So keeping your pets on flea and parasite control is very important during the summer months, as it is year-round.
Now, your business has treated the lions at Caddyshack Ranch. You've treated not just dogs and cats and more mundane animals. You treat exotic animals at your business.
Yeah, every once in a while we get a tiger or a goat or some other random species. Try and work with the zoo as well, but we do get to see those exotic pets, and it's, you know, just another reminder that all animals get cancer.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Zachary Newman is with SIVOMED, and this is Pet Appreciation Week, so take care of your pets. Culpepper's up in just a moment.
The Tony Awards are June 12th. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Scott Rudin. Five shows on which he was lead producer are nominated for Tonys. He's also a movie producer and has done films with the Coen brothers, Wes Anderson, Paul Thomas Anderson, and David Fincher. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Mm-hmm. The hurricane of 1928 was depicted in the Zora Neale Hurston novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk about the real storm with Elliot Kleinberg, author of Black Cloud, the Deadly Hurricane of 1928. We'll discuss Claude Kirk, governor of Florida in the late 1960s. That and more on Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT and Baptist Health invite you to Girls Day Out, Saturday, September 17th at the Hyatt Hotel. Enjoy breakfast, lunch, great speakers, including celebrity chef My Fam, and Good Morning America host and breast cancer survivor Amy Robach. Tickets are $40. Log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout.
Well, finally this hour, the Jaguars will open up a pair of off-season practices to the public this month.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
You can check out the 2 days of Jags mini camp next week. Our own Cole Pepper is on the line with the details. Cole, I don't blame you for not driving as Tropical Storm Colin bears down on us. So thanks for calling in this morning. How you doing?
Absolutely. Battering down again. Well, but it may be coming. So, you know, once upon a time, these off-season practices were open to the public, and it changes based on who the coach is and some other factors. But of late, they have not been open. You'd have to wait until training camp to go out and see the Jaguars. But this year, a little bit of a change-up. Next Tuesday and Wednesday, that's June 14th and 15th, at the practice fields there at Everbank Field, the Jaguars will open up practice. Gates open at 9. Practice will run from 9:35 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. It's free to attend, but you must register online at jaguars.com/camp. So if you want to go out and get a look at the Jaguars, they're garnering a lot of attention this offseason as maybe the team to be the surprise team in the AFC. And you want to get your first look, you can take a look. One of the reasons why they're getting a lot of attention is because of the offense and how it performed last year, even though the team didn't do as well overall. And on defense, the offense certainly got a lot of attention. And one of the guys who had a big year last year was Allen Hurns, the wide receiver, formerly an undrafted rookie. And a couple years later, he has a 1,000-yard season receiving, and the Jaguars, recognizing that, gave him a new contract last week. 4 years, $40 million, $20 million guaranteed. And this is, Melissa, just the first of what promises to be a number of veteran signings, re-signings here over the next year or two. Allen Robinson is a fellow wide receiver, Blake Bortles. There are others who will certainly get some big deals. The Jaguars have some salary cap room, and if this is the right group, and if they are a team that can contend this year, you're going to see a lot of these familiar faces around Jacksonville for a long time, which is something really we haven't seen since you have to go back to the mid-2000s when there was sort of a core group of players who were established and stayed in Jacksonville.
Well, yeah, we'll have to get to know those names. Good to get the early word from you. And meanwhile, you are the voice of the Armada. They're starting to gain some momentum.
Yep, U.S. Open Cup last Wednesday, they beat Charleston Battery 2-1, which sets up perhaps the most important match in the short history of the team. June 15th, a week from Wednesday, they take on Orlando City in the U.S. Open Cup at JU. U.S. Open Cup is a tournament which is open to basically every soccer team, even some amateur teams in the United States. And we're in the fourth round now, and so a chance for the Armada to face Orlando City for the second time. They played in the preseason and won. Now there's a lot more on the line here. Tickets are on sale this morning for season ticket owners, but they go on public on sale to the public on Thursday at noon for that matchup.
All right, that looks like a lot of fun. Let's talk about the Suns, the Sharks. You want to make sure people have those on your calendar and some tennis too.
Yeah, Sharks lost to Philadelphia 56-42. Jacksonville held scoreless in the fourth quarter, which is a rarity in arena football. Next up, they tried to even the record 5-5 when they go to Tampa Bay to face the Storm. Suns beat the Chattanooga Lookouts 3-1 yesterday in Chattanooga. They continue the series tonight, part of a long road trip. Suns are back home on June 15th. And I do want to take a moment here with tennis. For the first time since Rod Laver in 1969, One man holds all four championships from the Grand Slam tournament. Novak Djokovic dispatched Andy Murray in four sets to win the French Open for the first time in his career. Last year, Djokovic won Wimbledon and the U.S. Open and started this year winning the Australian before winning the French yesterday. Later, by the way, won all four Grand Slam events in the same year, so that achievement also still attainable for Djokovic. And we certainly shouldn't leave today without noting the passing of the most influential boxer and maybe the most influential sports figure of the 20th century, Muhammad Ali, who passed away yesterday. He'll be memorialized in his hometown of Louisville.
Yeah, thank you for noting that as well. Always good to talk to you. Culpepper, follow him on Twitter, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show this Monday. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Make sure to subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can watch the show with video on demand segments at tvjax.com and metrojacksonville.com. Next on Diane Rehm, the government's consumer finance watchdog has proposed sweeping regulations to rein in payday lenders. Their loans can carry interest rates of more than 400%. What the new rules would do and why they're controversial, that's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.